From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade, as the guy said with the really deep voice, and it is Thursday, one day away from the completion of the convention, but tonight will be the night the President of the United States, the former President of the United States, in an effort to be the next President of the United States, will speak for about 60 to 90 minutes, at which time, word is, he will not even mention Joe Biden's name, and why should he? Joe Biden might not even be the nominee, and I really felt as though he was going to withstand the storm, especially after the assassination attempt on President Trump on Saturday. Now I don't think so. He's tested positive for COVID. I know. The velocity of this news and the impactful news at that is stunning. I don't remember any time like this. I probably will never remember another time like this. But President Trump is ready because he thinks he's got the better stance on the policies, not the person. And then last night, J.D. Vance had a chance to open up and tell the American people what he's really like. Michael Waltz also had a key spot on the stage on Wednesday night where he had a chance to talk about the Donald Trump that he knows. He joins me right now in our makeshift studio right across from the convention center here in Milwaukee. Great to see you, Congressman Michael Waltz.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. And what a great night. What a great lineup.
Yeah, so you came out. You walk out. I know you had to sign this, the little disc out there in front. I saw your name, Michael Waltz. You walk up the steps.
Yeah.
You go in there. Anyone accompanying you goes upstairs. You walk behind the scenes, and you walk out. What's going through your mind?
Well, fortunately, I had a little bit of a dress rehearsal in that I introduced the party platform on Monday. And so this was my second time out. But you still cannot get over the or get used to the energy of the crowd, the reaction of the crowd. You just have to give a very different kind of speech. You really have to kind of ebb and flow with them. If you just try to flow through it, it just won't come out the right way. And I thought J.D. Vance did a great job of really having a conversation with 30,000 people and millions of people watching that. You know, it was kind of like he was just in his living room.
And, in fact, speaking of his living room, he talked about his mom, who was depicted by Glenn Close in the movie. And he was really raised by his grandmother, that's actually who Glenn Close played. But it's Hillbilly Elegy. But she has been sober now, and it's a good story, but a hellacious upbringing. Here's J.D. Vance talking about it, pointing at his mom in the audience. Cut four.
Our movement is about single moms like mine who struggled with money and addiction but never gave up. And I'm proud to say that tonight my mom is here, 10 years clean and sober. I love you, Mom. And you know, Mom, I was thinking it'll be 10 years officially in January of 2025. And if President Trump's okay with it, let's have the celebration in the White House.
So that was a great moment. Mom clearly,
moment.
And she said, that's my boy. You could read her lips.
Yeah.
So I felt like there was more conversation than speech. Here's who I am. Here's why I'm here. Here's what I hope to do.
Yeah, and everybody can identify with that. Everyone, I mean, all Americans across the country may not have had the greatest upbringing, may have issues with their parents.
You were raised by a single mom,
around,
right?
I was raised by a single mom who worked multiple jobs. I mean, never in a million years. I mean, she texted me, who would have thought, be speaking at the Republican National Convention in prime time. But, you know, I got to tell you, my favorite section of his speech was when he kind of walked through Appalachia, how people left the hills of Appalachia because they were so poor and moved into the factories of Ohio and the Midwest that have now been gutted and replaced by opioids and fentanyl and despair. But the line I loved is, are you going to tell me and them that they're privileged because of their skin color? Of course not. And I just really thought that was a dagger in the heart of the whole DEI critical race theory methodology, because it's about your surroundings and what you have to struggle through. You can't make broad brush stereotypes either way in any way because of someone's skin color.
I think that that's true. I also think that when he came out there, a lot of people don't know what to make of him. 39 years old. You can't say, well, he's too inexperienced. Look at Barack Obama. Well, he's barely in the Senate. Look at Barack Obama. And then when he comes out, he already served in the military, had the Yale background, the upbringing. So if you use privilege, you're just being inaccurate, not being telling the people the truth. But I thought overall the theme over the last 3 days has been Donald Trump is a human being. He is not a bigger-than-life personality. He's not a narcissist. He's not an egomaniac. He's not out of control. He doesn't bring chaos. He's a grandfather. He's a father. He's a husband. And he cares about people. That's what you wanted to relay. Now, what you see when the cameras aren't there. And he, for some reason, has been reluctant to show that side.
Oh, I know. Well, I could tell you why, at least what he shared with me, because he knows as the Commander-in-Chief of the United States of America, people like the Ayatollahs are watching, Putin is watching, Xi is watching, the cartels are watching, and he wants to project strength on the international stage. He knows that's how you keep the peace. So that's why you need others to tell that story. And the story I told was of him with the 13 Abbeygate Gold Star families after Biden wouldn't even take a call. He spends an entire amazing evening with them and helps them heal and was the consoler in chief as a good leader should be. But I just want to say one thing about Don Jr. That he shared with me yesterday after the assassination attempt. His daughter called him and said, I want to come up and talk about granddad.
And he said,
that's a
sure?
big stage. Honey. That's 30,000 people, millions watching. She said, I want to share with the world the granddad I know. And she crushed it.
And here is Kai Trump, 17 years old, cut six.
I'm speaking today to share the side of my grandpa that people don't often see. Mm-hmm. To me, he's just a normal grandpa. He gives us candy and soda when our parents aren't looking. He always wants to know how we're doing in school. When I made the high honor roll, he printed it out to show his friends how proud he was of me. He calls me during the middle of the school day to ask how my golf game is going and tells me all about his. But then I have to remind him that I'm in school and I'll have to call him back later. When we play golf together, if I'm not on his team, he'll try to get inside of my head. Yeah, I know. And he's always surprised that I don't let him get to me. But I have to remind him, I'm a Trump too.
Great you know line. What they did in the studio? They didn't do it, I guess, on Fox, but I watched it in the theater in Convention Center, they would cut to the president.
Yeah,
we didn't cut to the president on Fox, I don't think, because when we were watching it back on television this morning, I thought, I keep seeing the audience members, but to see the president in a different way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, your granddaughter up there talking about you. Yeah, right? I mean, I don't know how Don Jr. kept it together. I would have lost it, completely lost it.
So listen to this. You probably didn't see this on CNN. So he's Van Jones, good friend of Barack Obama, longtime analyst, and wants every Democrat to win. Cut eight.
The granddaughter came out and opened up our hearts, and the son just hit us upside the head with a baseball bat. So I'm not quite sure which way they're going, but that young lady she did her job of warming him up, humanizing him, making people feel that they could actually like this guy.
And that's what's happened. I mean, that's what's happened. I think Laura did it too, you know. And then, you know, you talk about what it was like behind the scenes with the Gold Star dads. We had the Jonathan Diller's family after he was murdered in Queens, in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. He goes and meets behind the scenes. I ask him, you know, what was happening behind the scenes. The way he goes, no, the Pimp family's obviously is extremely sad. And then we find out behind the scenes, the little boy hugged him and he talked to him. And the whole family was hugging him. They asked for a picture. He could have said that to me. He could have said, yeah, the three-year-old walked up to me and gave me a big hug. And he could have made him. I don't think it would have been self-aggrandizing. Just telling me what happened. Yeah. He does not want to do that. It almost ruins it if he says it.
Yeah, you have to have others say it. And that's why I was so thrilled. And it's one thing to have your family members, you know, your granddaughter's always going to love you in a certain way. But that's why I was so thrilled to then have the Gold Star families. One of them, Christy, you know, she said when she came out, I was just expecting another arrogant politician. I've read the news about him, what have you, and she was just blown away with how much time he spent with them and how much he consoled them and helped them heal.
My people don't know this. You and Marsha Blackburn worked on the platform.
Yes.
What was the hardest part of it? What should people know about it?
Well, first, it went from 82 pages to 12. The president felt very strongly about that. I mean, he plops it on the table, all of those pages. Like, who reads this? Who can comprehend this? We need to make this digestible to the American people. And he personally edited it twice. He was up till midnight the night. I was waiting to see the final product, and he was still working on it. That man has a motor like I have, and his energy like I have never seen. But I look, at the end of the day, it is his principles, his vision. If we do these 20 things, America truly will be great again. And I'm not proud of the product.
And would you say these things to highlight? Number one, for the first time in 40 years, it doesn't say anything about being pro-life or pro-choice. It doesn't talk about...
No, it does. It actually says it grants the unborn 14th Amendment protections, but it focuses on, as he has... What Roe versus Wade did was send it back to the voters.
But that's in there.
That is in there. Right. That is absolutely in there. Doesn't get into national law or constitutional amendment or any of those things. And some of the pro-life community very much wanted that.
And they're upset. How upset are they?
Ralph Reed helped us with the language. A longtime evangelical leader.
He understands.
Susan B. Anthony ultimately signed off on it. There's still a few that are grumbling, and I don't disagree with them. But at the end of the day, what Roe versus Wade did was, and the voters are deciding across state after state. I think it's the right, both political and principled policy to take.
What about on marriage? You took out the word traditional marriage because he says basically President Trump's like, I don't want to think people who are gay are not welcome here.
No,
and gay marriage is not welcome. I mean, if I said that during 2004, George Bush's, or even 2008 when Barack Obama was running, they'd say, of course, marriage is between a man and a woman.
And look,
by 2012, it wasn't.
That issue has absolutely evolved, but I think you have to make the distinction. The president also fully supports religious freedom, religious liberty. And if a church says we only want to marry a man and woman, that's absolutely within their rights. But then when you talk about civil law and the right of somebody to be a beneficiary on insurance policy or make a life or death decision in the hospital, we don't want people to feel excluded from that. It's two different things.
Is that the first time that's ever been in the party platform?
It is, to my knowledge. It is, at least in recent history.
A couple more minutes. I want to talk about the assassination attempt when we come back. Is that okay?
Sure.
There's so much going on. You would not believe it. Now, as we find out more revelations about what took place that day and how this could have been avoided in so many ways. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show on day four of the Republican National Convention, arguably one of the most successful conventions in the history of modern politics. And I think even Democrats would admit to that. Don't move.
More of the Brian Kilmeade Show, live from the Republican National Convention, next. The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm prepared this morning to call on President Biden to fire to Director Cheadle. Yesterday I said that she should resign. It's clear that she has no intention to do so. But the oversight here, the mistakes, the ineptitude, whatever it is, was inexcusable.
That is Speaker Johnson saying she should be fired. Then Cheadle shows up at the convention, and Senator Barrasso, one of the most mild-mannered person Michael Waltz you'll ever meet, and Marsha Blackburn hunted him down, along with Senator Lankford, and said, why aren't you answering any questions? She said, I'm here just to thank people for helping out. What are you talking about?
Well, first, I have a clarification question for Speaker Johnson. Which President Biden is he going to ask to fire Cheadle? President Biden or Dr. Jill, President Biden,
or Hunter,
right? Right,
Hunter's
because
well,
but she, staff. But she was on Jill's, Dr. Jill's detail. Apparently, there's reporting that she's the one that really pushed to put Cheadle in the spot. So I think unless Dr. Jill says go, we may be asking the wrong President Biden. But look, I think she's handled this atrociously. She should have been the first person to come out on the national stage, do a press conference, answer what questions she could, but importantly, ensure every American we are going to get to the bottom of this. This clearly was a massive security breach, and we're going to have full transparency. It could have been a five-minute press conference, right, but you show your face and you give that reassurance.
Congressman Walz, you realize the timeline's in every paper. We know exactly what happened. This is the most transparent investigation that hasn't taken place yet that I've ever seen. We don't wait for this Zapruder film to be developed. We found out he bought a ladder on Saturday. We know his parents called. We know it's his parents' gun. We know where he bought the ammo. We know that he had a scope in his hand when he was going through the magnetometers.
Yes, but I still have a ton of questions.
We all do.
Were the local law enforcement on the same communication system as the Secret Service? That's a huge issue. What were the preemptive protocols, the rules of engagement, to take a preemptive shot? When you see something suspicious, you don't necessarily take a shot versus obviously reacting to fire.
I want you to hear the Butler Township Commissioner today, Edward Natale, cut 27.
He was great.
Did all of your officers have comms with the Secret Service, or did y'all have someone that was a liaison?
All right. My understanding, we didn't share all channels, but there was liaison communications between.
So the normal standard protocol is you have a person that's assigned to. The second follow-up to that, was it your guy's job to secure that building where the shooter was on the top of the roof?
Absolutely not.
He said they had seven guys. All they did was traffic. So, Congressman,
who did the advance? Who assigned that building to which local law enforcement? Was it state police? Was it some other federal police? Was it some other local entity? Since the Butler Police Department was so small, were Secret Service resources diverted to the Jill Biden event that was in nearby Pittsburgh, or to the Kamala event that was in Philadelphia? I mean, we have Director Cheadle coming Monday. Important to note that she did not come and is not coming voluntarily. We had to subpoena her, which I, again, find atrocious. It is going to get, I think, spicy is going to be an understatement.
So if you're the President of the United States, do you think Trump would have allowed that? Do you think Trump would have said,
fired by tweet the next morning.
He thought it was a man that was heading up the Secret Service. He goes, well, I talked to him. And they said, it's a woman. So that was on the NBC interview. So they were looking at the would-be assassin was looking at the Secret Service through each other's scopes. 10 minutes before they knew about this threat, and they let the president get on the stage. I mean, if you want to just plant conspiracy theories in front of people's and put people's minds around the country where everyone's got such distrust, this is how to do it.
Look, Brian, I'm just so hesitant in the heat of a fight or the heat of a moment to doubt these guys. They're out there day in and day out, keeping us safe, keeping the president
rules
safe.
Rules of engagement could matter.
Rules of engagement absolutely
is that a broom
matter
in his hand, you said.
Absolutely can matter. And then, especially with somebody like we're finding out about Cheadle, what did she put in place? You have to go all the way and personally ask her?
But could you actually say this? I don't want to shoot a guy with a broom instead of a gun if I make that mistake, but can I at least keep the president off the stage?
I've been at rallies. Local law enforcement called in suspicious activity, and they held the president from going out, right? Especially if it's beforehand. But then once he's out there on the stage, I mean, it's gun, he's
gone. And
we
have video of the audiences going, look up. Congressman, you did a great job all week.
Thank you, sir.
Great speech last night.
From Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
But today is a terrible day. If you pull back and look at this thing, strength versus weakness, a bullet couldn't stop Trump. A virus just stopped Biden. You've got the nominees of this party getting their butts kissed. Biden's getting his butt kicked by his own party. The Democrats are coming apart. The Republicans are coming together. That's what's happening.
And you know what's crazy? That was CNN. That was Van Jones on CNN pointing out what you all know at home. If you're a Democrat or a moderate or independent or undecided, whatever, this is a fact. I'm not even asking for opinion. And Van Jones, to his credit, was citing a fact. Senator Steve Daines joins us now. He serves on the Finance Housing Committee and chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee. In other words, if the majority goes red, Steve Daines will deserve a ton of credit. Senator, welcome back. First off, Van Jones said it. I your thoughts about how it's been going so far as contrast to what's going on with Joe Biden.
I couldn't say it any better. I mean, I think as we are waking up this morning, it is safe to say the Republicans are more united at this moment than I've seen in probably decades going into a presidential election. And the Democrats are more divided than I've seen in decades. It's a unique moment, and nobody would have predicted this. Brian, you know, a year ago, if we were sitting here, if you would have tried to place some bets, which party would be really divided, which party would be really united, you probably would have predicted the opposite.
I'll tell you, if you play back my show, it would have been the rise of Ron DeSantis. Who else would take on former President Trump? He did not have a great 2022 in the midterms with some of the candidates that he backed out. He was looking at four legal cases. He would be indicted and have mugshots taken in Georgia. That was the story. And you thought, you know what? Are these going to keep him from running? And can anyone, would Ron DeSantis run against a guy that helped him get the job as governor? And the answer was, yeah, they would have a very formidable group of senators and congressmen on the stage running for president. Nobody would touch Trump. He would gain power, push back, or beat these cases. And with every mugshot, every indictment, he'd gain money and ratings. That was the unpredictable part of it. The attack wasn't. The reaction was.
Yeah, no, it's remarkable. I'm not sure.
I didn't predict it either. Yeah,
who could have predicted this, really? And we think about where the mainstream media is, just pouring gas on that fire against President Trump, stirring up the 91 indictments, the trials and so forth, stirring up division. And now where's the mainstream media at? They're out there now, you know, challenging Joe Biden. I mean, this is something that none of us would have predicted. It's a moment we've got to capitalize on, Brian, though. And here's one of the other concerns I have. I think that we can become overconfident 3.5 months out. There are going to be some more dips and curves between now and November 5th. This is why we've got to keep our heads down. We've got to keep working really hard and make sure our people show up to vote.
So I don't want to get into that much detail of what's happening on the other side right now, but just save it to say that Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff agree on one thing. Joe Biden's got to go. And they don't talk about his health. They talk about his ratings.
Yeah.
Well, I just saw Reuters. Reuters said 43-41 Trump. I mean, that's with the RNC, with winning on the surviving an assassination attempt and showing great courage, literally in the line of fire. It's still just 2 points. Why are they panicking on the left? Have you ever seen anything like this?
Never seen anything like it. Tell you what, though, these national polls, you know, are at best a proxy for what probably is happening right now at the battleground states. What really matters is what's going on in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, in Wisconsin,
is that what they're saying?
In Georgia. Well, as we're looking at our own polling right now, you know, Trump's looking strong in these battleground states. But here's the problem the Democrats have. This potential pivot to Kamala Harris is not some kind of salvation for them. I mean, look, she had a miserable finish in that Democrat primary. What, got down like 3%. She can hardly string two cents together.
The whole staff had turned on her.
Look, and you know, the White House, the Biden team and the Harris team, and their knives are out for each other. If you go back, you know, the last few years, the Biden team has been, you know, blaming Kamala Harris for part of their plunge in their ratings, which is actually not true. She hasn't held, but, you know, Biden's been his own worst enemy. But Kamala Harris is no friend of the president and vice versa.
So if we look at what's happening right now, I don't see him surviving. Literally, he's got COVID, so he goes into hibernation. But you have all the delegates. You know the mechanics of this. He's got 4,000 delegates. He's got 14 million votes. The DNC is geared for him in Chicago. If he doesn't want to go, can you force somebody to go?
Well, look, they've just got – they're in a really tough spot. It is not an easy pivot to make. They've got to switch those delegates. You know, they've got their 700-plus superdelegates. I mean, one thing that's crazy that the Democrats talk about, you know, we believe in democracy and so forth. They're the closest thing to a cigar-filled room with a bunch of Democrat Chicago insiders of anybody in terms of picking power. That's because the Democrats worship power. The power is the most important thing to them. Freedom and liberty is what we're about.
Here's just Jeff Zeleny of CNN reported this. Cut 17.
He's being receptive, not as defiant as he is publicly. Goes on to saying, talking about Vice President Kamala Harris, who initially he wondered how she may fare in a campaign should it come to that. I'm told now he's asking questions, saying, do you think Kamala can win?
So does that, because you are among leadership, and I know President Trump really respects you, how much does that change strategy?
At least in the lane that I'm focused on now to win back the majority control of the Senate, it doesn't. We've always viewed this. When I first went down to Mar-a-Lago and was elected into the leadership to chair the National Republican Senatorial Committee, whose mission is to win back the majority, when President Trump and I first met, we agreed what we need to do is find the best candidates, the America First candidates, who can win not only primaries but general elections, because winners make policy, losers go home. And President Trump and I have flown like the Blue Angels in formation, very tight as it relates to what's going on in these battleground states, because I told the president, the most important thing we can give you after you are elected is a Republican majority in the U.S. Senate, because the first call you make is to the majority leader of the United States Senate. Why? We've got to move through the Secretary of Treasury, Secretary of Defense, Director of CIA, these critical continuity of government positions. Imagine if Chuck Schumer were majority leader and Trump's trying to work with Schumer. It's a disaster.
So it means you have to flip your Senate seat that John Tester has held in one of the reddest states in the union.
It is.
And he has prepared himself as a moderate, and he is not a moderate.
He's not. Look. So, you know, we're going to get to at least 50 because we've won West Virginia with Jim Justice. That takes the U.S. Senate to 50-50, a coin toss. We need to win one more state to win the majority outright. That is Montana. That's the most important next state to get. John Tester voted to impeach, convict Trump twice.
Yep.
He voted against every one of Trump's Supreme Court nominees. He voted against the Trump tax cuts. He has an F from the NRA. Tim Sheehy, our great Navy SEAL, 200 combat missions, Naval Academy grad, business guy, an A from the NRA. So it's not just how he votes with Biden in terms of Tester's record. It's how he voted against Trump. Now fast forward, you go take a look at his voting record with Biden. 95% of the time, Brian, John Tester has voted with Joe Biden.
Right. People will say, there's some moderates that might stand up to packing the Supreme Court. There's some moderates that might stand up and stop Democrats from getting rid of the filibuster, adding two more states. And the moderates that stood up are named Senator Sinema, now gone, and Senator Manchin, about to go. So they're both about to go. Never was Tester. They made Manchin and Sinema take all the slings and arrows.
Yeah, Brian, here's an old principle of politics. Sometimes people vote with their eyes. When they look at John Tester, they see a crew cut, pretty good-sized guy.
Farmer.
He's a dirt farmer. He wears the dirt farmer tag all the time. So they think he's moderate. His voting record is as liberal as
any of
them.
Then why does he keep winning?
Because he's poured $42 million. Chuck Schumer has poured $42 million into Montana, pounding Tim Sheehy. Brian, we have 1 million people and 3 million cows. 1 million people with $42 million poured in is like Dave McCormick in Pennsylvania, another great Senate candidate, having $500 million dropped on him. So the problem right now we have in Montana, 3.5 months left to go, it's resources. It truly is. It's a rally. We've got a website. It's Senate24.com, Senate24.com. We've got to get our patriots engaged behind this so Tim Sheehy has what he needs to pull this up. Right now that race is tied. It's tied. 3.5 months out. We've got a shot to win Montana with Tim Sheehy. We do that, you win back the Senate majority.
Well, that would be it. The other place is Mike Rogers in Michigan. Mike Rogers, 3 or 4 points down. See, every one of the Senate candidates, I mean, they got really some great qualities. Tim Sheehy seems like a fantastic guy. Mike Rogers got a resume that anyone would kill for. And then you got Dave McCormick, West Point wrestler. Outstanding businessman.
82nd Airborne.
82nd, yeah. He's a war veteran. Yeah. And he also worked in Treasury during the collapse.
He was there with
Secretary Paulson, wasn't he?
He was. No, he's got incredible experience, executive experience within the White House.
But he's still got 3 or 4 points.
No, he does. Well, these races are all going to tighten up between now and November. That's just the way it works as the ballot starts tightening between the presidential.
Right.
But we got Bernie Marino in Ohio. Trump's going to win Ohio by 10 points. Marino's got a great shot in Ohio. Got right. Eric Hubdy in Wisconsin. Talked about Mike Rogers. That's an open seat, by the way, in Michigan.
So your job is to get them more recognized. Final thought on how to do that. Mm-hmm. And out of those states you mentioned, I know you care about all of them, out of Pennsylvania, Michigan, out of Montana, those battleground states, and Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. What are you most confident? What are you most worried about?
Well, I'm worried about every one of them. I truly am. When you're the head coach, you're keeping your head down here and working hard all the way to Election Day. But let's just say what the prognosticators said. It's tied in Montana. Nevada, Cook Political just moved Nevada to toss-up. They moved Michigan to toss-up on the Senate races. So just objectively, you look at those states. But we've got Carrie Lakes in play in Arizona. She's just 2 points down right now.
Gotcha.
So we've got a chance to have a really good night. but we're behind in every race.
Which is going to keep you up a lot.
Yeah, will keep me up a lot.
And I know, Steve Daines, and I know they're talking about you as majority leader. I know you're thinking about doing that. We'll see. You'll be an impact player, but you do have to go 3,000 miles to go home. And I know that's a stress on you and your family. Senator, great to see you.
Thanks, Brian.
It's been a great week for you guys.
Thanks.
Back in a moment with Steve Hilton. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show live from Milwaukee.
More of Brian Kilmeade live from the Republican National Convention next. From Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
The people who are planning the Democratic Convention are taking notes because they got to go to rewrite. These guys are putting on a good show. It's a show of confidence. Everybody they're putting up there says they're confident. Some of the people they're putting up there are quite controversial. Some of the people up there are saying things that you could cut little ads about or use on social media. But they know that, and they're confident. This is a very professional Trump team putting this program together.
John King and CNN, pains him to say it. Steve Hilton joins us right now, who really has perspective and will call out anybody that's not doing their job. I think we got a very successful convention. Impressed with the production, the content, the stagecraft?
Hugely. And actually, remember, this is what I used to do. Like back in the day with the British Conservative Party, I used to put these shows on.
Right.
And I'm looking at this just from that professional perspective. The message is great. It is not. But what's interesting about it, exactly as John King was saying, it's not too stage managed. It's not boring in like everyone has to say the exact same thing. They've got real people saying real things, a good mix of personalities. But the story that's coming through is incredibly clear. We are for regular working people, working families, everyday Americans. This is the new Republican Party of Donald Trump and J.D. Vance.
While putting a personal touch on the 78-year-old president
goodness.
I have not seen.
Amazing, amazing. And you know what's interesting about that? It's now really believable because of, even though we haven't really heard it, we've seen it, the change in him since Saturday. Everyone here has been talking about it. It looks and feels like a changed person in a really interesting way that we'll see tonight.
Well, Donald Trump wants to always project strength. He has a heart. It's not up to him to project vulnerability. So if he projects vulnerability, he'd rather somebody else talk about it than him. You can understand that.
Oh, for sure. That is the absolute essence of Donald Trump. And that's why, you know, what we saw on Saturday, particularly the image that's now instantly iconic, will be for centuries, I think. Why is it so iconic? Because it captured in one image the essence of him, that strength.
I'm not going to play it because I don't want to take time away from you, but Joy Reid said that 9 seconds of his Secret Service let him have under that flag. And I'm thinking to myself, what is he talking about?
Sake.
I mean, do you this is I mean, it's by far insane. Probably the worst thing I've ever heard. How you could – he was being shot at. He's bleeding. And they say the Secret Service let him pump his fist.
I mean, it's just so insane. But it shows you – we overuse the term derangement, but it really is that. I mean – how can anyone think like that in that moment of sheer shock and terror? And it's unbelievable. And we've all now seen the videos and the recreations of what happened and the extraordinary miracle of what happened there. In that moment, all of it was instinctive. Everybody behaved in an instinctive manner. Now, you could have criticisms of the way the Secret Service behaved, but you can't say that it was some calculated thing to help Trump politically.
So the whole goal was to stop these close elections and broaden out and go back to the regulars. Go get your 48 states. Go get your 49 states. To do that, you're going to have to go off some hard conservative issues because there just aren't enough conservatives in this country. Doesn't matter if you are one, Steve Hilton, or I am one. Do you have to win everyone? Are they doing that?
Yes, because what's interesting, it's something that I talked about right at the beginning of the Trump phenomenon after Brexit and Trump 2016. Because of this new orientation, the Republican Party has the potential to become a multiracial working class coalition. And so that is the breadth of the appeal. It's almost class-based in the sense that regular working people, now you can be very, you know, finicky about, well, what's the working class and what's the middle class? Working people, that's a majority of the country. That's like right up to 80% of the country.
Right.
And the non-elite, if you want to look at it that way.
Sometimes we take our directions from you guys. You got to have a liberal prime minister now, first time in decades. Should we read into that here in America? I shouldn't say you guys. You're an American. But should we read into that?
I think the thing to read into it, and actually to all the elections that just happened in Europe, because you had slightly different outcomes in terms of...
I can't make sense of France.
Well, the thing that makes sense of all of it and the European elections that came just before, it's a vote against incumbents. It's a vote against the people who are there. It's a vote against the status quo. People who are just sick and tired of what's going on with borders in their country. That was a big issue in England and in France. What's going on with pushing this climate extremism so far that it's just hurting working people. That was an issue in Germany. You know, and all over the continent of Europe, it was the same. It was the same as people saying, look, we're fed up. We're sick of all this. And that's what you're seeing here as well. That's why this is such an optimistic convention. People can feel it.
Leslie, looks like Joe Biden's going to get kicked out. If he gets kicked out, it could be any minute, any hour, any week over the next 2 weeks. Do you think it's wrong to think that Gavin Newsom would be on a ticket? Do you think that he wants to run? Do you think he wants to run right now in this environment?
No. Here's what he wants to do. What? He wants Trump to win. He wants 2 more years as California governor, being the number one antagonist of Trump, standing up to Trump. And then he wants to run in 2028. That's why he's backing Biden so hard.
Do you think that Mark Kelly is somebody Republicans should worry about, the astronaut, fighter pilot, military background, senator from Arizona?
He's a strong candidate, but he's not, compared to all the others. But, I mean, he's not Trump. He doesn't have the track record. He doesn't have any reputation for economic turnaround, anything like
that. Could Kamala Harris be repackaged at this point?
She has to be the one that does that. And we haven't seen any kind of authentic version of her that I think appeals, in particular, to your point, across the country, let alone where the election is going to be won in places like where we are in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania.
What does it tell you about Democrats that they throw him over after one debate, after selling us that he was the savior?
Well, all these people have been lying for so long. I mean, the thing that I always thought was that he would cling on, and then the same people that first said he was the greatest leader ever, then said he's a disaster, and then came back and said he's got to go. Maybe there's one more round of it.
I never would want a friend like that. Steve Hilton, I always, you would have my back, not stab me in the
exactly.
back.
Exactly.
Thanks so much, Steve. I'll talk to you again soon.
Great to see you.
All right. And he didn't wear a tie. I know you knew that already. Back in a moment. Brian Kilmeade from Milwaukee.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Right, welcome to the latest moment of Brian Kilmeade Show. Normally, I'll say I'm at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, but that would be lying. I'm in Milwaukee, just right across from the convention center where all the action will take place. We know what's happening tonight. The former president who wants to be the next president will speak for at least an hour, maybe 90 minutes. The word is Joe Biden's name will not come up, believe it or not, and why should it? He might not even be the nominee, but his track record certainly is going to be a target. But he will speak more about uniting the country. I think this guy's going for 50 states, not just 270 electoral votes. Joining us to help us out this hour, Governor Jim Justice. He says a personal friend of the president's and one of the main reasons he switched parties. Steph Kite's going to be here from Axios. But most important, according to them, the two most vital members of the Ruthless podcast, John Ashcroft, as well as Michael Duncan. And guys, thanks so much for coming over. And oftentimes I outdress everybody on radio, but not today. You've done it. You've done the harder thing, two-tone, right? I mean, you want blazer, maroon tie, different type shirt, not the expensive shirt, but it's different, and then tan pants.
Well, we're here at the Republican National Convention.
So you got it.
So you got to dress up.
And, of course, I was talking about John. Michael Clark Duncan, you look a little bit different than we promoted you on Friday. So for everyone should know, before the assassination attempt on President Trump's life, we had taped a segment with the Ruthless podcast. And on Fox and Friends, I'd like to promote on Friday what I have coming up on Saturday. And what happened?
Well, I got like a million text messages from people that in that promo – Fox had used a picture of Michael Clark Duncan instead of me.
Right.
And everyone was just giving me a hard time. My parents are laughing.
Star of the
at
Green
me.
Mile.
Star of the Green Mile. I'm tired, boss. You know, it's just, I didn't know I had such an illustrious career, but, you know, it's nice to be nominated for an Academy Award.
And let me tell you, that's been a source of huge laughs on the side of the fellas. We were like, one of the guys had to pull his car over. He was laughing so hard.
Like, and Fox and Friends was apologizing. They said they don't know what happened. I go, I loved it.
No, it didn't bother me at all.
They didn't know what I thought it would hurt our relationship, but it's not. Right? Is that true?
That's true.
Right. Now, why do you think Josh Holmes is so overrated? I mean, why is that?
How long do you have?
I know. So the Ruthless Podcast, did you guys know how – did you guys kind of have a sense of what you were capable of with this, the four of you, the chemistry you created, the buzz that's taking place in and out of Washington because of what you guys are doing?
Well, we always knew we had the chemistry. We're actually our friends.
Your
behind
friends.
The scenes. We would hang out and do the exact
and
same thing.
And talk politics. Yeah.
I mean, that's just what you get with the podcast is what you would get if you were sitting at the bar with us. And that's the whole idea behind the show. Did we know it was going to be as big as it is today? I mean, I guess we hoped. I know Michael Duncan understands that in this business, the stage is everything.
Now
he really
right.
really sells it.
Now, let me ask some. There's four of you. Mm-hmm. How many are married?
All of us. Four of us.
Right. Do you wish that you weren't married now that you're so famous? Because this is the time when you guys become a real catch.
Yeah.
Don't you think so?
Well, I got to tell you a story. So early on when we were starting this show, and, you know, people are downloading it, but it's all, you know, it's on your phone, it's on your computer, and it, like, doesn't feel that real. And then, you know, went to an event, these staffers from Capitol Hill came up, and they're like, "Are you Michael Duncan? It's so great to meet you." And my wife was there. And we get back in the Uber on the way home, and she goes, "So, you have groupies now." And, yeah. So, I mean, hey, look, it is what
get
it is.
Get used to it, yeah. Right? Have you changed, John?
No, okay. This is the same. Well, I'll tell you in one way.
Right.
I was press secretary for 20 years, and now I'm walking around with a badge that says I'm a reporter.
Right.
And that's a lot of fun walking up to all these old reporters who they used to ask questions, and now I'm asking them questions.
So J.D. Vance, okay, gotcha. Now, so let's be a reporter and an analyst at the same time. J.D. Vance, the pick for number two. A lot of Republicans thought that the president would do better by maybe being more inclusive, have somebody less like him, for example, and going for Rubio, going for Governor Burgum. Where do you guys stand, first off? Was it a good pick?
I think it was a tremendous pick. And I do think he chose someone who was less like him. J.D. Vance grew up in poverty in Ohio, not far from where I grew up. And if you saw that, you saw the image of his mother. She couldn't feed him when he was a child. And there he is on stage.
So the personal background, but the beliefs are very similar.
Well, the beliefs are similar because I think a lot of Republicans, and I'll tell you one thing, Brian, I think you've noticed this. A lot of Republicans are unified right now in their beliefs that we need to help the working people, that we need to build out this economy in a way that works for everybody, not just a few. And I think that that's sort of an ascendant point of view on our side.
I want you to hear a little from J.D. Last night. Here he's talking about what the assassination attempt did to him, cut two.
I want all Americans to go and watch the video of a would-be assassin coming a quarter of an inch from taking his life. Consider the lies they told you about Donald Trump, and then look at that photo of him, defiant, fist in the air. When Donald Trump rose to his feet in that Pennsylvania field, all of America stood with him. And what did he call us to do for our country? To fight for America. Even in his most perilous moment, we were on his mind. His instinct was for us, for our country, to call us to something higher, to something greater.
Michael, that was a pretty good moment. It was, and there were cutaways to President Trump at the same time.
Yeah, inspirational, I would say. Like, I was sitting, you know, at the arena during the speech, and you could just feel it. People are proud to be an American. What Donald Trump did in standing up and lifting that fist in defiance, it made people feel good. And I feel like there's just so much negativity in politics right now, and it's so divisive. It really felt like a right. different sort of moment last night.
The investigation is going to take on a life of its own because it is so maddening to think this happened and how preventable it was, how he was literally in the scope of a Secret Service agent 10 minutes before he actually pulled the trigger. So you would think it's pretty obvious, Republican or Democrat, that was a heroic, lucky moment for the former president of the United States. But if you want to talk about deranged, listen to this. Now, we should tell everybody, yesterday, our current president tested positive for COVID-19. Cut 18.
Donald Trump is an elderly man who, for whatever reason, was given 9 seconds to take an iconic photo op during an active shooter situation. His survival of that and bouncing right back and going right to his convention is being conveyed in the media world as a sign of strength. This current president of the United States is 81 years old and has COVID. Should he be fine in a couple of days, doesn't that convey exactly the same thing? That he's strong enough, older than Trump, to have gotten something that used to really be fatal to people his age.
Don Lemon just called up and said that was really stupid to say. And, you know, he was telling to talk about women in their prime. Yeah. Joy Reid might have surpassed and lapped Don Lemon in this. So can you put into words how stupid that is?
I don't think you can put into words how stupid that is. I mean, you have to hear it to believe that it was actually said.
Yeah, would you rather have the flu or get shot? I don't know. Which would you pick?
Right.
I mean, you know? But I think it actually it indicates something larger, and that is the problem of the Democrats. They're really scraping the bottom of the bowl right now. They got nothing. They got no juice. They're talking about a think tank white paper, this Project 2025, because they can't nothing sticking to Trump. And, like, Republicans are united. We're all on the same page. We're having this great convention. So they're kind of grabbing at anything they can to get some sort of momentum back from into Biden.
Yeah.
So the 2025 thing that you referenced is the Heritage Foundation did. Mm-hmm. A very conservative think tank. They have a lot of money. I think their director is fantastic. And it's fine. It's 900 pages. Now they're trying to say Trump is 2025, that he is going to go for an abortion ban and go back to free trade and go back to what's in those 900 pages. Do you think they'll be successful in panicking people the way they've been successful in the past, maybe in 2022, labeling the MAGA movement as something that's dangerous and out of control and radical?
I don't think it's working, and it hasn't worked so far because they're the ones who are dangerous and radical and out of control. I mean, look, President Trump there was an assassination attempt on his life last Saturday. So if we want to talk about who's out of control, the left is showing people who they are rather than telling them. You know, showing is so much more powerful.
Right, and the question is now, yesterday, 2 days ago, the question was, why does the president need a bandage like that on his ear? Is that something that even the doctor didn't want, but he's trying to draw more attention to it? So I thought that was dumb. This might surpass it. I got to say, CNN has been kind of deferential to what's going on here. You'd get so much more respect from people even if you were going to vote for one guy. But if you just acknowledge when the other guy has a good day, it makes me wonder in the big picture if they should have pulled Joy Reid off. And were you surprised that MSNBC pulled off Morning Joe the day after the assassination in the morning? That is their number one show.
Yeah, that was wild. And then, of course, Joe came on air the next day, and he said if they do it again, he made all kinds of threats against the executives. He actually took shots at Lester Holt, who did the interview with President Biden the other day. And so there must be something going on inside of that network that's just odd. Last night, I don't know if you guys saw this, Gold Star Family up there making a speech. MSNBC cut away from them last night.
Did not see that.
It was wild. I don't know who made that decision, but it was a very bad decision. It's just the thing is, it's just in line with everything else they've been doing lately.
Right. And by the way, we did have that. And I just know in life that you have a boss, even if you become very successful and valuable, whether you're an investment banker and you seem to be on a roll, you call out your boss. You have to be understood that you could be fired.
Yeah.
And they are almost daring to be fired. But doesn't it go back, Michael, to when they said they didn't want Ronna McDaniel on their air, and Chuck Todd and others started speaking out saying, how dare you do this? And NBC backed off. So now the anchors are running the asylum?
Yeah. And, I mean, we saw this back in 2020. Remember when Tom Cotton wrote that op-ed for the New York Times and the Slack channel went crazy and they ended up firing the editor? All because he was saying, hey, maybe riots are a bad idea and the National Guard should help us, you know? And we've seen that in the progressive movement in the era of Donald Trump, is like these younger employees at these organizations or just left-wing activists who work in media, they don't see their job as being a professional job, right?
Right.
They're activists at the end of the day.
Right.
And it is. It's the inmates are running the asylum. Can't say it better than that.
So, guys, stick around. I want to come back and talk about what's happening on the left, because I heard a disloyalty. Joe Biden, after spending 100 years in the Senate, 8 years as a vice president, and now 3 years as a president, has a bad debate, a hideous debate, got it. Everyone has turned on him, except maybe his Hunter. His dog never liked him, clearly, and his wife.
Yeah.
When we come back, more with the real brains behind the success of the Ruthless Podcast, not the overrated Josh Holmes or the comfortably smug. Back in a moment, Brian Kilmeade in Milwaukee.
I'm tired, boss.
Stay tuned for more of Brian Kilmeade, live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, next. Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
And as my brilliant colleague, Zach Basu, puts it at the top of Axios this morning, President Biden is now self-isolating both medically and politically. With COVID now, he had given the sequences. He had said what could get him out of the race. The president had said the Lord Almighty. Then he said data, polling that showed I couldn't win. Then he said health. Then privately is reporting saying that he's being told that Vice President Harris can win. So all his boxes now are checked.
And that was Mike Allen of Axios. Do you agree, guys? I'm sitting here with the most important elements of the Ruthless podcast. John Ashcroft and Michael Duncan. Coming up after that would be Steph Kite of Axios. But, guys, do you agree with that assessment? John?
Well, I got to tell you, I think it's going to be really hard to knock the sitting president of the United States off of the nomination if Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer themselves are releasing public statements, running a public campaign. And even if they do that, it's going to be hard to knock Joe Biden off the top of the ticket because he is the president. That's a powerful position. Even though the guy's brain dead, he's surrounded by people who understand how to use the levers that they're given to hold on to the power they have.
And no one can just take it away from him. You know, it feels like everyone's having an intervention about taking away the car keys from Grandpa, but he's out there in the car driving around town, and he's oblivious to it all.
But we've never had Senator Schumer, John, and Hakeem Jeffries and Adam Schiff come out at the same time and say this. We heard rumors they're about to.
Right.
We have 22 in the House. I just don't know what they're doing. Is they're wounding him to such a extent that he can't survive? Or you're saying that the delegates are his life preserver?
Well, the delegates certainly are his life preserver. The question is, are they going to publicly pull that away from him? And can they publicly pull that away from him? Maybe what we're seeing with Schumer and Jeffries, like you said, coming out publicly just over a couple of days ago.
Right.
Maybe that's the start of something much bigger. But they can't do it in the background. It's not something that you can just sort of slink and hope that you ghostwrite a column for George Clooney and then that's going to get Biden out. It's just not going to work that way. And then this Schumer meeting, which is a story. I know that you guys have been talking about this. It's a story we actually broke.
He went to Delaware?
He went to Delaware himself. We broke the story on the little program that could, a Ruthless podcast. And we talked about how he drove out there by himself to make an appeal to Biden to please get out. And it was not a very productive meeting because I think Biden got upset. And I think it's pretty clear he said, no, I'm not leaving right now.
Well, I guess if someone has leverage, for example, if it gets to the point where James Comer might be able to get the documents he needs to really pursue what he was up to for those years, we know there's a lot there. We know that for sure. So, I mean, if that could be one thing, the other thing would be if they do something for if they have Jill finally understand.
Yeah.
Or if he falls again.
Dr. Jill?
Yeah, Dr. Yeah. Jill, yeah. We don't know what she's a doctor of. But if you want to know how he's doing on his reclamation tour, here's a little of his interview at BET yesterday when asked about dealing with Republicans. Cut 22.
Trump's going to sign a bill if he gets elected. We don't do well. That's going to say we wipe it all out, no exceptions, nothing. Done. And so it's a little bit like George Floyd, what happened. You know, I had to take independent action. It wasn't as strong as what I wanted the George Floyd legislation to be. And I couldn't get Republican votes. So we got to point out what's at stake and what the MAGA Republicans are trying to do.
Feel better now, Michael?
I'm not quite sure what the heck he was talking about.
Yeah.
You know? And that really is his problem.
He's got like
here.
Three different ideas.
He's three different ideas, and he only gets halfway down the road with each one of them. And it's why Democrats are so nervous. They feel like he can't prosecute the case. And in that debate, that was the thing that filled them with so much anxiety. It wasn't Donald Trump and, you know, he didn't nail the line on abortion. It was fundamentally Donald Trump looked good, and Joe Biden had no defense to it.
Mm-hmm. I also think that if he's out, he's got to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he can't run again, he also is not running the White House.
Right. Yeah. So it's sort of counterintuitive, but it's almost like he did so bad he can't leave. Because if he can't run for president, it's pretty clear he can't do the job as president.
So right? What do you conclude?
Then you'd have to 25th Amendment him. I mean, he literally can't do the job.
And who has to lead that? The vice president.
Well, the vice president has to lead it, but I mean, she doesn't have the. She does not have the internal SWAT. This woman didn't even get to Iowa in the presidential
race.
Amazing. Her only shot is really this like hook or crook way to move Biden out and to put herself in, but it's going to take Obama. It's going to take the Clintons. It's going to take them coming together, these powerful voices. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to do it. But as Republicans, let me tell you, we're scared to death of Joe Biden being our opponent. We don't want to run against Joe
right.
Biden.
You
Joe.
Fear.
fight.
You don't want to get up in the morning and find out he's out.
Right.
You wouldn't be able to get out of bed. Right? I mean, so I know. It's just crazy. I think we're gonna find out that he's out this week, though. I hate to tell you.
You might be
right. All right. So, John Ashbrook and Michael Duncan, appreciate it. Steph Kite next. See you guys on the Ruthless Podcast.
Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I got another message to the criminal cartels in Mexico. You smuggled enough fentanyl across this country to kill 148,000 young Americans. You have killed more Americans than every terrorist organization in the world combined. And that's when President Trump gets back in office. He's going to designate you a terrorist organization, and he's going to wipe you off the face of the earth. You're done.
Tom Homan was awesome last night. It had a totally different tone. Then you had Kai Trump, who came out, the 17-year-old, the oldest daughter of Donald Trump Jr. She did fantastic humanizing him. I thought that Michael Waltz was good. I thought David Bellavia was fantastic, the Purple Heart recipient. He was great. Then you had the Gold Star families who lost their lives at Abbey Gate. They came out right after Michael Waltz, talked a lot of personal stories. Steph Kite's here with Axios covering it all. Steph, you mentioned you're outside the town. So you just come in, you take an Uber, you come in during the day and you just find out what stories are happening,
yep,
right?
That's how it works. I just hang around, talk to sources, grab, you know, coffees and lunches and watch the speeches in the evening.
Right. So when you think about day three, I thought it was very successful, a great weaving in of big names as well as regular people who are really affected by what the Republicans were doing and what the Democrats are.
Yeah, and you know, I spoke to a lot of people who pointed out that the real American segments have been particularly powerful for people, and you know, of course, the granddaughter moment was a big one last night.
What'd you
think? It was very powerful. I felt like it was very powerful. It's clear that they're trying to humanize Donald Trump. They're trying to show a softer side to him, especially you know after the assassination attempt over the weekend. But I felt like it was successful, and you know, I talked to my reporter friends. We felt like it was a strong moment for Trump.
But you know, to me, it's not like, hey, let's make him look softer. Let's put him into give him an ascot. Let's not have him wearing those red ties. Let's not change him. It's almost bringing out a side that he was reluctant to show. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I was watching The Apprentice, the finale. I was able to be in the audience, and I've said this before. And then in every break on those finales, all his grandkids come running out. They come up to him. They ask him stuff. They hand him, like, Legos and do things. And you just see this fun side of him before he was running for president. And then I'm thinking to myself, do people know he's a grandfather? Do they know how much time he plays or the time he gives to this family? You know, they kind of separated it. Ivanka's in there. Jared's in there. Russia's taking over this administration. So this part of it, I think on some level, he might still be uneasy about, do you think?
I think so. I mean, it's certainly a shift in the way that they've always tried to portray him. Going back to 2015, he was the tough guy. He was the tough president, making the hard calls, you know, businessman. There hasn't been a lot of emphasis on, you know, Trump, the family guy. That's Biden's thing, right? President Biden has always been someone who loves his family, who talks a lot about his family. Everyone knows how much he loves his family. And, of course, the Trump family has been, you know, very much in the news, has been part of his last administration, are clearly his favorite surrogates. But this is certainly a shift in the way that they're trying to portray Trump also as just, you know, more humanizing, a softer side. He loves his grandkids. It was interesting. We Axios interviewed Don Jr. earlier in the week, and he also brought up his daughter and how much Trump loves to talk about golf with her. So this is certainly something we're seeing as a theme this week. And I do wonder if part of that is, you know, after the felony convictions, if they feel like they want to show, you know, a little bit more of a sympathetic side to Trump to kind of counter any argument or any influence on some voters who are concerned about that felony charge.
I want you to hear a little from J.D. Vance last night. Here he is in Milwaukee talking about his grandmother. Listen, cut three.
She once told me when she found out that I was spending too much time with a local kid who was known for dealing drugs, that if I ever hung out with that kid again, she would run him over with her car. That's true. And she said, JD, no one will ever find out about it. Now, thanks to that mamaw, things worked out for me.
Talked personal story. The naming of JD Vance, what are your thoughts? How is it working for the MAGA movement, for the Republican Party?
I think the J.D. Vance choice is fascinating. He was the person I always thought would end up VP, so I feel vindicated. Yes. You know, I bet fake money on Fox News once that he was going to be the VP pick, so I feel good about that. But he is certainly a unique choice, and, you know, a lot of people have talked about how it is kind of a coronation of the future leader of the Republican Party. And, of course, Vance has this very populist brand, and I think especially in the foreign policy area, given the fact that there's been this fight over Ukraine funding, he clearly is someone who is more in the isolationist camp, doesn't think the U.S. should continue providing aid to Ukraine. The fact that Trump would choose someone like Vance is certainly interesting and tells you a lot about the way the Republican Party is moving right now.
Right. So Dan Crenshaw took on J.D. Vance, who says Ukraine doesn't matter. Cut five.
Trump has always been pretty good about supporting Ukraine. When Obama was giving Ukraine, you know, blankets, Trump was giving them weapons. So I'm not as worried about the Trump presidency. J.D. Vance says Ukraine doesn't matter all that much. Well, the vice presidency doesn't matter all that much either. The president is what matters, and that's who I'm voting for.
So that's a lot of people. One of the big reservations is, for me personally, I really think Ukraine's got to be supported properly. The slow walking of weapons, the limitations on how they're used, that has to change in my view too. But when J.D. Vance came on our set and just said, yeah, we have to have our resources against China, that's not the problem. I think, unfortunately, you can't give up on Eastern Europe. I wonder what his impact will be on the president, because I also know that Tucker also thinks like that, and he's tight with the president.
Yeah, I mean, look at the people who are around Trump right now. Look at the people who are influencing him this time around versus the first time around. And
Steve Bannon, Kellyanne Conway.
Exactly. And, you know, there is a shift, especially when it comes to foreign policy. And we've seen Trump flirt with more of this isolationist approach in recent years. And, you know, yeah, sure, the vice president doesn't have a lot of power necessarily, but they do have influence. And it's clear that Trump likes Vance and that they get along, and Trump plans to keep him close. And that Vance is very close with Don Jr., who also has lots of influence over his dad. And so I think that is a space to be watching. And sure, Trump has been very supportive of Ukraine, but even, you know, I covered, you know, the passage of the aid deal in the Senate. You know, Trump wasn't fully pushing for Republicans to get on board with that. He could have put more effort into getting that done, and he didn't. So, you know, I think that is a space to watch, and, you know, especially if Trump wins in November, what that next administration would look
right.
like.
Right. Do you notice that President Trump did not go after Larry Hogan when he says, I don't want his endorsement, and it's not going to be helpful, and he didn't say a word?
It's another.
We never saw that.
I know. It's another sign of Trump really trying to hold back this time around. And I think they recognize that Maryland is a very blue state. They haven't elected, you know, Democrat, a Republican to the Senate since 1980, I believe. So they understand the politics there. And right. I think Trump wants a landslide in November in the Senate, in the House, and in the White House. And if, you know, letting Larry Hogan be Larry Hogan is a way to do that, he's going to be on board.
So we have. We have every Democrat telling us that Joe Biden was fine for the last 3.5 years. He chose the basement to be right. He was responsible on COVID. He doesn't give press conferences ever. He doesn't give sit-down interviews until recently. didn't give press conferences until the NATO situation. We don't really see that now. We find out he hasn't had a cabinet meeting in 9 months. But when he crashed and burned during that debate, everything changed. How does this end up?
You know,
it's Thursday.
A few days ago, I would have said, you know, I think Biden is going to hold out because he's stubborn and he has repeatedly said that he does not intend to step aside and that he's the only person who's going to make that call. But I will say we've been getting a drip, drip, drip from Nancy Pelosi in recent weeks and in recent days. And now there's this reporting that both Pelosi and Schumer had very serious one-on-one conversations with President Biden, telling him that they don't think he has a way to win in November. And that's going to be influential, especially Pelosi. When it comes to, you know, Biden doesn't listen to a lot of people. There are a very small number of people who actually have influence over what Biden's going to do. His family members, Jill, of course. Mm-hmm. But Pelosi is one of those people. They go back a long ways, and he has a lot of respect for her. And if she is really urging him to step aside, yeah, maybe he will. It feels like the reporting has shifted, and Biden is actually considering what people are saying for the first time. Whether he actually makes a move and steps aside is still an open question. He is still a very stubborn person who wants to stick around.
Also, they're going back and forth, too, on how serious he is about dropping out. And they said that there was a report that he was at least open to it because he thinks there's a possibility that Kamala Harris could win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been kind of a shift in that. He in the past, did not think that Kamala Harris had a chance to win in November. He's kind of said publicly that he believes he is the only person who can beat Trump in November, and that's a lot of the reason why he's stuck around. He very deeply believes that. But there has been a shift where he's at least been asking his advisors reportedly, you know, how can Kamala win? You know, he's at least entertaining the idea, right, looking into the polling, looking into the possibility, because I do think he really is motivated by, you know, wanting to stop another Trump presidency.
And the question will always be asked, whose idea was that debate? From the Democratic perspective, whose idea was that debate? You know, there's a theory that they never thought Trump would say yes. But other people say, no, we said anytime, anywhere. So who wanted that debate? So you guys are reporting. This is Axios, right? Several Democrats privately tell us that the Jim VandeHei as well as Mike Allen. Do you like them?
I love Jim.
Okay,
and Mike.
Good. That's a very good answer. Privately tell us that rising pressure of the party congressional leaders and close friends will persuade President Biden to decide to drop out of the presidential race as soon as this weekend. Wow, you talk about big news. Number one, they're letting the Republicans have their say. Mm-hmm. They don't know what their opponent is, while pressuring J.D. Vance to commit to a vice presidential debate. And the comeback was, who is Kamala Harris going to pick as their running mate? J.D. needs to know who his debate partner, opponent would be. That was just their sarcastic, tongue-in-cheek retort. But we thought that would be, they thought they'd just pin him down to a date. But instead, it looks like they need a candidate. And how they're going to do it, who's going to get all this money? Only Kamala Harris can get the money, right?
She will be the easiest option. You know, there would be loopholes for someone else if they decided to nominate someone else as the nominee. But Kamala Harris certainly is the easiest option there because her name's on the ticket. It would be much easier to move that money from Biden to Harris and move forward with that. And of course, you know, it's hard to imagine Democrats not you know, skipping over the first black female vice president.
Steph Kite here from Axios. And finally, we got Donald Trump tonight going to speak for 60 to 90 minutes. We have Eric Trump is going to be speaking tonight. What do you expect that what's going to be the call? What do you think the theme of the president's speech is going to be?
I mean, the theme of the week has really been unity. He's said that word over and over again since the assassination attempt. I'm very curious to see the tone of his speech tonight.
All right. Coming up next, Governor Jim Justice. Steph Kite of Axios, thanks so much. It's going to be a busy final day, but at least the end is in sight, right?
It is.
And it's fun.
It is fun. I'm having a great time.
Back in a moment.
More of Brian Kilmeade live from the Republican National Convention next. Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Wasn't too long ago when Governor Jim Justice would be waiting for the Democratic convention, but he switched parties and he's going to be switching jobs. He is governor of West Virginia. He wants to be the next senator of West Virginia, replace Joe Manchin. And by every poll and every conclusion, he's going to get that spot. Governor, how would you characterize the convention that you came in on day two for?
Brian, I think it's going great, and I think the speakers are all on track. You know, it seems like everybody's united in an effort to try to, you know, well, not to try to, but to absolutely achieve. You know, my dad was the person always said to me, he said, "Son, I don't care how hard you try. You know, I don't want you to confuse effort with accomplishment." And so really, that's how I grew up and proud of it, to tell you the truth.
So you want to see if it's going to come through first on the Senate. Do you convince you would be the 50th seat if the Republicans can hold? Have you talked to others? Do they feel optimistic about any other state, or are you just focused on your own race?
No, Brian. You know, I'm surely talking to a lot of candidates, you know, on the Senate side, and as well as some folks on the House side. But here's how I see it, and you know, don't anybody get upset with me on this, but for crying out loud, a lot of times we as Republicans, you know, find a way to, you know, screw up the elections, and. You know, we're very optimistic because we know that we have the right message and you know, we have the right values. And so therefore, well, you know, John Doe's going to win. And then all of a sudden we get our butt handed to us like what happened in 2022. And then we all huddle together and we start coming up with a way to, you know, pass that off to somebody else, you know, and really at the end of the day, it really just falls on us. You know, I'm a real believer that we best better absolutely play like we're behind and absolutely, you know, assure ourselves in every way of trying to come up with more seats other than just the one that I'm going to deliver. I mean, I'm going to absolutely, for sure, win West Virginia. Even I can't screw that up and everything because the people of West Virginia genuinely, right. and like they you. Love me, Brian, and I love them too. I really do.
Governor, the President of the United States, your thoughts about him as your friend and how close he came to losing his life on Saturday.
Oh, Brian. It just, it will for the rest of my life send just cold chills all over me because, you know, we almost lost the president. We almost lost our president-to-be. In a lot of ways, we could have lost America. I mean, that's all there is to it. And from Jim's standpoint, Jim almost lost a great, great friend. And so it was just, it was horrible. But because I really believe that, you know, if that bullet had hit my friend Donald in the head and we'd have lost him, you know, there's an awfully good chance that we could end up maybe with Joe Biden as our president again, or God forbid, Kamala Harris. And so I just right. and you know, we just cannot survive. I don't know how this nation gotcha. Could possibly survive another 4 years of this because we have regressed so much in every direction known to man. I don't know how we can survive.
Governor Jim Justice, best of luck. Great speech. I look forward to seeing you in Washington. We'll see if it be in the majority and to see if you'll be working with your good friend, President Trump. We've got a few more months. It'll be a sprint. Thanks so much, Governor.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Be good. Thank you.
You got it. This just in, as we mentioned before, Axios is reporting the top Biden aides now believe the president will drop out of the race, and it could come sometime this weekend. That's the president dropping out of a race. Doesn't mean he's leaving the White House right now, dealing with COVID. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show on the road in Milwaukee. Don't move.
News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Proud to be coming to you from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, site of the 2024 RNC, just across the way from the convention center, where the president, in about 12 hours, will be giving his address. The last time he'll do this at the convention to close it out and formally accept the nomination of his party. Meanwhile, he's dominating in the polls to the point where it looks like President Biden is going to be forced to drop out. Axios was reporting that he was given some polls that show how dire the situation is. No one's really talking about his mental health. No one's talking about his physical health. They're saying the polls are so bad you can't win, and therefore the pressure is getting so bad that he could drop out as early as this weekend. The other story is the ridiculously effective convention that we're witnessing right now. The personal stories, the real-life American stories, the message about humanizing the president just 2 days. This begins just 2 days after he was nearly killed by an assassin's bullet. Joining us now is John Katsimatidis. Listener Katsimatidis is kind enough to allow our show to be heard on one of his, on his great affiliate, WABC. He's the CEO of Red Apple Group, CEO of Christides, as well as running a series of successful groups, one of the most successful businessmen in America. And I just wanted, John, with all your experience in politics, have you ever seen a week like this that we're all witnessing?
I would tell you the last few weeks, I've been doing politics since I was 14 years old. I've never seen it like this. And on top of that, President Biden, I've never in my life seen so many mistakes by a president in my life. And I got to a point where I really worried about our country. And I've had discussions with U.S. senators, and I said, you know what I worry about? It's not about me and you. I worry about our kids and our grandkids that we're going to make it to 2076, our 300th year, because our country is under attack in so many ways. It is unbelievable. I think President Trump still has to worry. I think he has to over worry, because the rumors that Iran is going to be after him. You got to remember something, Brian, that the biggest loser is going to be Iran. Under President Trump, Iran was pumping 400,000 barrels a day at $50 a barrel. President Biden right. has allowed him to pump 4 million gallons a day at $90, $100 a barrel. We made them zillionaires again, as I've been saying. And the fact is that they use their excess money that we give them because of the price of crude oil and gasoline. And they hired the Hamas, they hired the Hezbollah, they hired the Houthis. And I can't believe the commander-in-chief of our country does not – the Suez Canal is closed. The Red Sea is closed because the Houthis that have been paid off by Iran closed it. And right. that causes and the price of oil to be up $15, $20 a barrel. And the commander in chief
right, and the president of the United States doesn't do anything. He doesn't do anything. And now we have. So, have you ever seen, for example, just looking at this convention, you have the WABC out here. I think it is playing perfectly. They're selling the story. They're selling J.D. Vance. They're talking about expanding the party. You have Nikki Haley down here, Governor DeSantis with a rock and rolling speech. Then you have the granddaughter of Donald Trump talking about what type of person he is. They're packaging this well. Wouldn't you agree?
I think they're doing a terrific job. I was there in Milwaukee all day Monday. I came back to New York on Tuesday. I've been watching it every night. I've watched every speech, and they're doing a great job. And J.D. Vance, you know, I wasn't sure about him 100% at first, but I think he did a great job yesterday. And he points out that he has ties in Kentucky. And he talks like, from Hazard, Kentucky, and he's ties in Ohio, ties in Wisconsin. And if he could win those four or five states for President Trump, then I think they're going to have a success.
So John Casamitidis, first off, before we talk about who his opponent might be, let's talk about this. David Sachs, executive, is now signed on board. You have Ackman, who's another very successful investment banker, billionaire. He is now on board the Trump train. Elon Musk made it clear he's on board. What's going on with this billionaire community where they're realizing Trump is finally their best ticket, it seems? Do you getting that amongst your peers?
I am getting it from all the CEOs that, unfortunately, because I always respect the presidency of the United States, I don't think I would hire President Biden to run one of my supermarkets. He doesn't have it anymore. He doesn't have it anymore. He's a different President Biden than he was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And Senator D'Amato, he was at Senator D'Amato's wedding, and Senator D'Amato is one of my best friends, and he says the same thing.
You've known him for years. So why aren't the Clintons, who you're also very friendly with, why aren't they just pressuring him to get out? Or are they behind the scenes? What do you think, John Casamitidis?
Well, I don't know what Hillary wants to do someday. You know, the truth is, I did not want to ask. You know, they're friends of mine, I love Bill Clinton. I was a Bill Clinton Democrat. I ran part of his campaign. I didn't want to ask. But deep down inside, I'm sure if there was an opportunity for Hillary to jump in, she would jump in.
So do you think that she's going to maneuver to do this? Because word is from Axios and other now outlets that the president is going to be stopping his reelection campaign as early as this weekend. If that happens, what do you project would be next? Are they going to have a scrum? Are they going to give it to Kamala Harris? Is Hillary Clinton going to say, I have the power, I want a rematch?
The truth is, anything could happen. You know, you have the Pelosi powerhouse that runs California, and she's going to be pushing Kamala Harris. You have the Obama powerhouse, and I don't know where he stands on it right now. And then you have the Clinton powerhouse. So it's a combination of the powerhouses that are left in the Democratic Party and what they're going to do.
You've known Donald Trump for a long time. He now knows this job inside and out. He knows how to campaign. He knows how to put an organization together. Do you think, from what you've seen so far, do they have what it takes to close this out? They have what we see, with everyone agrees with, is a lead, but they don't have the win. Do you think they can close this out, regardless of the opponent?
I know Donald Trump for 45 years, maybe 50, and he's a very smart guy. And my advice to him, when I saw him, let's not get overconfident. Never get overconfident. And tell people how good of a job you're going to do to run our country, run the world, because the president of the United States is the president of the world, just about. The president of the free world. Let's not get overconfident, and let's not criticize others. Let's just tell people how good of a job we're going to do versus how bad of a job they're necessarily doing, because I think everybody knows how bad of a job President Biden is doing.
Yeah, and we're seeing that, and we'll see if the president's going to close out this strong. And then Saturday is going to be in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We'll be live on One Nation on Saturday night at 9 o'clock to bring you either the recap or dip in and out and give you an idea of what's taking place. John Casamitidis, thanks so much. It's been an exciting week. You can't take a minute off because something changes in this news cycle. Thanks so much,
Brian,
John.
Keep fighting for America. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Back in a moment. When we come back, Emily Dominich joins us. Emily, Senior VP of Boundary Stone Partners and former Senior Advisor to Speakers Kevin McCarthy and Mike Johnson. Don't move.
More of the Brian Kilmeade Show, live from the Republican National Convention, next. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
He's being receptive, not as defiant as he is publicly. Goes on to saying, talking about Vice President Kamala Harris, who initially he wondered how she may fare in a campaign should it come to that. I'm told now he's asking questions, saying, do you think Kamala can win?
So now Joe Biden, that was Jeff Zeleny yesterday, and now Axios is reporting today that he could be dropping out as early as this week. Is there another way out? Emily Dominic joins us now, knows all about inside politics, senior VP at Boundary Stone Partners and former senior advisor to Speakers McCarthy and Johnson. Emily, your thought about where this is heading? Do you think it's already a done deal?
You know, Brian, I think I said this on Fox a couple of weeks ago. As soon as Nancy Pelosi started questioning the president's ability to continue to serve, I thought this is the end game, because she is such an effective operator behind the scenes with Democrats. And it's very clear that she and Senator Schumer are really pushing the president to get out of the way and let the next generation lead. I think it's really hard to recover when you have those sort of forces behind the closed doors on the Hill, talking to leaders in the Democratic Party, saying that Biden can't continue to run.
So, I mean, how he could run and who's in his corner. I mean, we saw Jeff Koons over the weekend. We saw Jim Clyburn. We saw the Congressional Black Caucus backing him up. If they don't move, and we saw Bernie Sanders still backing him up. So do they stare each other down at this point? I know it's all unprecedented, but in your opinion?
In my opinion, I think it's going to be very difficult to get President Biden, who has been running for president since I was born, to step back from this role. I think we've seen it over and over and over again that he's been unwilling to step away. But I think we're starting to see some softening, and we're hearing from Democratic aides in the White House that he's getting pressure internally to step down, which I think is going to be a big part of this discussion.
Who in the Biden world would really press him that he cared about?
I think that's a really good question. I think of somebody like Steve Ricchetti, who is one of his top policy advisors, who led, we negotiated with him during the Fiscal Responsibility Act negotiation under Speaker McCarthy. I think that's a serious voice he listens to. Obviously, I think he listens to Ron Klain. So there's a question of his top advisors are going to have to decide that he can't continue.
And I guess Ron Klain on the outside, Jeff Zients on the inside. And then you got his wife and Hunter with nowhere to go, and they're probably his biggest advocates. How do you think that affects what the Trump team does? They went from feeling very confident to really not knowing, because they don't know who they're against.
Yeah, I think it makes it very difficult to prepare, particularly going into the fall, not knowing who your opponent's going to be. I thought when we got the announcement that Senator Vance was going to be the VP pick, I thought to myself, this only matters if we're going into a vice presidential debate wondering if Kamala might actually be the nominee. That really changes how that discussion is received by folks, and I think it puts a lot more of a spotlight on Senator Vance going into that role.
Yeah, and we don't even know who he's going to be running against.
Exactly. Is he a surrogate for Trump, or is he actually talking to a future, vice presidential candidate?
Right. I want you to hear Mike Johnson, what he wants to do about the assassination attempt on President Trump and the Secret Service with refusing to answer questions and refusing to hold a press conference. Cut 26.
I'm prepared this morning to call on President Biden to fire Director Cheadle. Yesterday I said that she should resign. It's clear that she has no intention to do so. But the oversight here, the mistakes, the ineptitude, whatever it is, was inexcusable.
So I think that would go without saying. The fact is that President Biden hasn't done it. He hasn't stepped up. He's not leading. It's another example of we don't know who's running the White House.
Absolutely. I think we've also seen, to the speaker's point about how the Secret Service head should have resigned, I think we've seen this over and over again in this administration where major mistakes are made and no one takes responsibility. We had the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan and almost no consequences for senior leaders in the Biden administration. Now we're seeing President Biden not really looking like he's prepared to lead the country in any serious way and not taking responsibility for that. So I think it's a trend, and it frankly puts a lot of pressure on folks like the speaker and congressional oversight to make sure that we are trying to make and hold people accountable for mistakes.
Is this one of the rare times there should not be any partisanship?
I believe so. I mean, I think this should be something where we say we have to have real honest oversight about what happened here, because it impacts far more than just one candidate or one party.
I mean, think about this. The Secret Service, who obviously throw in their body in front of the bullets, and they do it every day, but they had him in their sights, the would-be assassin, 10 minutes before. The guy walked through the magnetometers with a vision finder. So it was obviously something that would be used for a gun. He put a ladder, got a ladder, put it on the side of a building. No one even saw it. And then the fact is, that he was picked out by the people in the audience. And also knowing that Joe Biden was also seemingly on his target list looking at his phone. Shouldn't that be the cue that this is an emergency?
Absolutely. And I think,
can Hakeem Jeffries do that, something like that?
I think you can see bipartisan oversight in this kind of an area, but, you know, it requires, this is part of why, frankly, congressional majorities matter. We talk a lot about presidential politics in an election year, but truthfully, who is in charge of the House and the Senate is what determines whether or not we can see whether the appointees in an administration are actually doing their jobs. We need that oversight capability, and I think the Speaker is exactly right that it's Congress's role to do that.
So how would you characterize how this has gone over the last 4 days?
I think it's been a really interesting convention. You know, we've seen, we've heard a lot from folks. I was saying earlier, I think you get the auditioning for the potential cabinet role from folks giving speeches here in the RNC. I think, you know, Governor Burgum is a great example of someone who came with a really strong American energy message yesterday. I think he's well suited to be in the cabinet. And then I think we're seeing people evaluate Senator Vance for what his impact is going to be on this ticket and what his policy positions are. And of course, you know, we've heard from folks on the left that he's going to, you know, destroy America and he's going to wreck the climate and the environment will be ruined. And, the truth of it is, I think we heard a really pro-worker, pro-manufacturing, pro-American energy and anti-China message from him last night. That's really similar to what we hear from folks all across the aisle.
But I think the moment was really taken by Kai Trump to humanize the president.
Absolutely.
Here's a little from her speech, cut 7.
Even when he's going through all these court cases, he always asks me how I'm doing. He always encourages me to push myself to be the most successful person I can be. Obviously, he sets the bar pretty high, but who knows? Maybe one day I'll catch him. On Saturday, I was shocked when I heard that he has been shot, and I just wanted to know if he was okay. It was heartbreaking that someone would do that to another person. A lot of people have put my grandpa through hell, and he's still standing.
So, obviously, the crowd, that's what everybody was talking about, even on other channels.
Yeah, it's always wonderful to see young family members do well in these high profile situations. But, you know, I'm a parent and my heart absolutely warmed to see her do so well on that stage. It humanizes the president. I think it makes it shows the American people that he's more than just the guy who's up on stage and at a rally. And I think I hope that we see some of that from President Trump tonight in his remarks.
Yeah, I think that in the 45 minutes or the hour that he gives him, I'm sure that'll come up. But he doesn't like to show vulnerability. He likes to show the toughness, which was on display Saturday.
I'm sure we'll get some of that.
Yeah, we will. Thanks so much, Emily Dominich. I appreciate it. When we come back, Bill Hemmer and Dana Perino will join us. You're listening to continuing coverage in Milwaukee, side of the RNC. Don't move.
Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
But today is a terrible day. If you pull back and look at this thing, strength versus weakness, a bullet couldn't stop Trump. A virus just stopped Biden. You've got the nominees of this party getting their butts kissed. Biden's getting his butt kicked by his own party. The Democrats are coming apart. The Republicans are coming together. That's what's happening.
There you go. Welcome back, everyone. That was Van Jones just summarizing what went on yesterday. As late last night, you saw that Joe Biden contracted COVID again, so he goes into isolation. Now Axios is reporting that top Biden aides believe the president will drop out of the race as early as this weekend. This weekend. After a series of interviews, with us right now is Bill and Dana Perino, the host of America Reports, America's Newsroom, excuse me.
I guess. I apologize. You've been here too long.
From 9 to 11. Is that a big rivalry you guys have?
No. It just means that we would have another 2 hours to go.
Oh, no. And how late were you on last night, on Wednesday?
11, we do the special year? Coverage. Yeah.
Okay, so, special coverage means whenever it ends.
When it ends, yes.
Right. You don't look at the clock.
Last night it was 10:34.
Okay. Listen, Brian, Dana and I, we'd be doing this anyway.
Yeah, we'd be up anyway.
Right.
We just get the opportunity.
You're doing it at the bar.
Yeah, hanging out with you at the bar.
Right, absolutely. Just well-dressed
without
makeup.
How about you? You did Gutfeld Live the other night and still came up and did Fox and Friends.
Right, but I didn't do it well. You guys are doing it well.
I heard about that. Yeah.
I said to Brian yesterday, I said, you did Gutfeld? He goes, I thought it was taped.
I did, but I said yes. So Axios is reporting he's going to drop out. Dana, you just told me you're not surprised. Well, number one, do you believe the report? It would make sense.
I have 2 points. One, I'm not surprised, and I was just remembering that on the night of the debate 3 weeks ago today at 9:17 p.m., I put my pen down. I didn't take another note, and I said, it's over. And my friend, Brett Baer, who was sitting next to me, goes, the debate? And I said, no. His candidacy and maybe his presidency. And a girlfriend of mine sent me a note. She goes, you told me it would be done by July 30th. So I'll just say all that to say I'm not surprised. I'm sad for him. But here's the other thing. His team, this is campaign spokesperson, Bill Hemmer, just read it out on the air. The campaign spokesperson for Biden said, we're full steam ahead. Everything's fine. Mm-hmm. The problem for them is that now they have a top Biden aide telling reporters from Axios, which are trusted reporters, that Biden will be out as soon as this weekend. I will tell you as a comms person, as a press person, it's impossible to stop that tsunami once it starts. He can go out there, Quentin Folks, the campaign spokesperson, and he can tell us it's definitely not true. But if that's already out there, it's going to be impossible for them to pull it back. So I think a question there's three questions for me. One, if it does happen, when does Biden actually say that? Because he is unwell. The COVID hits him hard. You could see it last night when he was trying
to barely get up the steps.
And so he has that symptom of the extreme tiredness. So Do you want somebody to make a speech when he feels like that? No. But it's 4 weeks until tomorrow that the Democratic convention is supposed to start. So then my other two questions are, one, if you are pulling out of the campaign, sir, can you actually serve as president for the next 6 months?
Absolutely.
And then the third question is, if he is going to leave, what is the mechanism that the Democrats are going to use to get a new nominee? So many questions. Excited to cover it all. Sad for the president in a way, because I know this is not the legacy he wanted, but he and his family made a decision to run for re-election, and that was their worst decision.
How about the second worst decision? Let's have a debate in June.
Yes.
And expose ourselves. Ultimately, who made that decision? Bill, you don't agree with anything Dana said.
He really doesn't.
He doesn't. So where do you want to go from there?
I was just sitting over here shaking my head.
And by the way, if you want to help the show, don't show Dana the breaking news. This is not a secret. Yeah, we can't have secrets on the show.
Dana and I
we're a national
Dana
show.
Dana and I always do these things where, what do you think about blah, blah, blah? They're hypotheticals that we throw out every day. So this morning I said, what happens first? Is Cheadle fired or is Biden out? And
you said who lasts longer?
Who lasts longer? And she said Jimmy Carter. All kidding aside, it's a joke. All kidding aside, the Quentin Folks statement, I think it's kind of, it goes in, I didn't hear the question. And I like this goes to the answer that Biden gave on BET. What was the, everybody plays his answer, but nobody plays the question. How was the question framed? So I don't know what he said before, but Folks says, I think when it comes to if he's being open or receptive to any of that, meaning the reports that he's becoming receptive to the possibility of ending his campaign, and then he stops. He says, look, the president says it many times. He's staying in this race. The president is in this race. We look forward to accepting that nomination in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Look, when it happens fast.
Yeah.
And I remember when Hillary Clinton made that decision. What was it with Obama? It was a Saturday afternoon in Washington, D.C. And it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And she said, you know, look, I'm out, but that glass ceiling has a million more cracks in it, or whatever the quote was. You know, Dana could be very right. I mean, it's possible he could bow out this weekend. My guess is if he does have COVID, he's got Paxlovid in him right now.
You know,
even though he was weak last night, he may be a lot stronger within 24 hours. And who knows, if he goes down all day today and he yields the day to Trump, which he probably should do anyway, we'll see where his state of mind and his body is on Friday.
But the thing is it really a matter of his state of mind? But what kind of support does he have? He lost Schumer.
This is a great point. If he goes,
he lost Pelosi. Yeah.
If he goes to Chicago, which Democrats sign up to speak on his behalf?
Honestly, all of, just his grandchildren.
Not even and Hunter. Hunter will be the keynote. And but he's the advisor anyway.
And maybe Chris Coons.
And Dr.
Right, and Chris Coons. Jill. It's going to be a very short. You're going to have to scale back your coverage.
Yeah, aren't
you guys going?
It's just, I remember last week on The Five, Harold was saying, here's all the things that Biden needs to do in order to gain back confidence. And he was listing all the things Biden should do. Well, he did them all this week, and he did them poorly. They never should have had him do all of these interviews. He hasn't done interviews in 3 years, and they wanted him to do 12 interviews in 3 days.
Right.
He screwed them all up, mm-hmm. and he got COVID. And it's just—it's all like it's all been overtaken by events. I mean, now it's just all now they have to figure out how to help him exit gracefully. How do you help a man like this land on his feet to for the good of the nation, for the Democratic Party, and you know, really to show the world? Because one of the things that
that's
we were
the
just
thing
talking
I care about least.
I know. I mean,
Because it's like, what do we do next? Well, because you have a Republican, you have no opponent. You have Democrat, but no nominee.
Another way to say that is the hits just keep on coming.
Oh, man.
I will say, among the media class here in Milwaukee yesterday afternoon, there were a couple people talking in the following way. Hey, Republicans should be careful what they wish for. Kamala Harris could be more of a challenge than they are giving her credit for. Because not that she's going to go out and give some great loquacious interview or speech, but that she could actually go to the basement strategy of 2020. Everything's on a prompter. Everything's structured as carefully as possible. I thought the Trump team was very smart yesterday afternoon when they put out the statement about the vice presidential debate. First of all, you don't commit to a debate that happens before a convention.
Nope.
And you don't commit to a candidate that may or may not be there.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's so true. We'll find out, too. And this is all happening without even knowing that Hulk Hogan was going to speak. So for this
exciting
to happen, yeah, it's going to be great. He's going to be interesting. Eric Trump's going to be interesting. Dana White introducing the
foreign president. It's interesting
to me
because, I mean, the President Trump is expanding the coalition in a way that's interesting. It's not so much worried about independent suburban women. He's figuring out a way to grow the party with more attention for Black Americans, especially Black men, Latino men, and young people of both genders, but certainly young men. So all of that is happening. So you can see across the board, yeah, J.D. Vance helps you win the blue wall. Trump himself is building the new coalition, but there's not a lot out there for independent women. I think they've decided we probably don't have them.
So a couple of scenarios. I talked to Lindsey Graham last weekend, and he said if you take Kamala Harris and he grabs Governor Whitmer and says historic ticket, they could get momentum from that. If he gets Shapiro, he said that all of a sudden you got Pennsylvania, you could start taking Pennsylvania back. You can get momentum from that. And also you start obviously, President Trump is making gains in the Black community. That stops on a dime. I don't necessarily believe that. That was his thought, that would stop at least the bleeding of the Black vote that was happening to Joe Biden.
That's possible. I also think that what Bill is saying is that the Republican Party is not going to just be able to waltz right into the White House. This is going to be a fight. And no matter who it is, including Kamala Harris, there will be a renewed energy and purpose
That's
and excitement.
Exactly right.
And what the Republicans have right now is emotion, and they have the big Mo. I was trying to think of what is the opposite of the big Mo. That's what George H.W. Bush said you need in order to win an election.
The big Mo.
It's the big slow. That's what Biden has. He has the no good, terrible, very bad day, and it keeps happening to him. But Kamala Harris allows you the circuit breaker to start fresh,
yeah,
kind of.
They have a vote in this, too. And listen, I think today Republicans have put on the best convention I have seen in memory for Republicans. I think Democrats always do it well. They stick to their message. Listen, in Chicago, you're going to hear abortion a million times, Brian. And you're going to hear Donald Trump's name 3 million times.
But they're going to be at each other's throats.
That's all they're going to say. Okay, and they may. And they may also get this mini primary, which is going to draw a lot of media attention along the way. And her VP pick will be very interesting. I think that with the Whitmer idea, okay. The Shapiro idea, I'm a little more inclined to go that way. That might be a really good move. But they're going to have 3 months.
to battle this out. And even though the pendulum is swinging toward Trump, I would argue in a significant way coming out of Milwaukee, there is still time for them to recover.
The other thing is, Joy, if I feel as though I have a future like Wes Moore, if I'm Governor Shapiro or Governor Beshear, and I go, I'm going to run for president in 2028, and they go, no, we want you now, I might say, wait a second, I got one shot at this. Yeah, there's a chance if I barely lose and I'll be queued up for next time. But there's so much downside if I get in and I lose.
How does Chris Christie feel about that? Chris Christie should have run in 2012. He decided not to, and he doesn't have a career right now in politics at the moment.
But Governor DeSantis did at the time. He had his perfect timing, and it did not work out for him.
But he was going up against Trump.
The former Prime Minister of Canada, Brian Mulroney, may he rest in peace.
Oh, lovely guy.
Taught me something that I had never thought about with regard to politics, and I've never forgotten it since, and that is this. I said, sir, why do these people go to Iowa and live in $30 hotels for a year? And he said, because, Bill, they believe there is one moment in history for them to make a mark and influence that history. And that's what the best politicians do. Barack Obama saw it.
Jimmy Carter?
I mean, it was Hillary Clinton's moment, and he stuck his foot in the door and stopped her.
However, they ran up. They did a traditional campaign. Here's my momentum. What do I have in the caucus? I go to the breakfast. This is going to be, hey, the nomination's in 3 weeks. You haven't run at all. You haven't established yourself at all. You've got no bases. Go in. Here's some money, not all the money. Here's some money. Let's sprint. Should I wait to do it the right way? Instead of this,
I don't know if they're going to have a vote for that.
I
think Andy Beshear has been a really popular Democratic governor in a state that used to be blue and now it's red in Kentucky. I don't know if Gretchen Whitmer is a good candidate. I'm not sure. I think Josh Shapiro, from what I've seen, has been very competent, but I don't know if he's that dynamic. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing about J.D. Vance last night, I read his speech 2 hours before I gave it. I scored it a B. And I said to my producer down there, I said, Amy, I said, I wonder if he can take this speech from a B to an A, because you never know how it plays in the arena. I think he took it to a C. I think it was an average presentation of what was otherwise was a B-rated speech. There were some really good lines in there that just didn't have the gusto and the vigor that you see like a Sarah Palin in 08 or a Paul Ryan in 2012 or a Mike Pence in 2016. And there may very well have been a reason for that, and that is I'm the smart, calm guy on this ticket.
Right.
You don't have to worry about me. I am not a threat to you. This is my story. This is me speaking.
So don't be too good. Like, in other words,
too good is not the phrase to be used here. The phrase, I believe, is measured.
Measured. Gotcha. When we come back, we're going to have a final 4 minutes to reflect not only on this campaign and this convention, but our lives. We're going to reflect on all that.
Yeah. Only 4 minutes.
We did it. Yeah. Back in a moment.
Stay tuned for more of Brian Kilmeade, live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, next. From Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. Just a few more minutes with Bill and Dana Perino. We've been on the air nonstop on their show. I want you to know what Joe Rogan's perspective is, Mr. America, on what he's been seeing. Cut 19.
How about that president? How about that Trump fellow? How crazy is this? If there's ever been a real indication that we're in a simulation... It's like this season of USA is the craziest season that's ever existed. There's so many twists and turns, so many plots, so many villains, so many incompetent, bumbling fools that you're like, there's no way that lady's a heartbeat away from the president. There's no way. There's no way someone is not telling her to stop saying that same thing over and over again. What can be unburdened by what has been?
So I just love to see people on the outside, his perspective with no sense. I got to break this news today, Dana. Rogan just saying, can't believe what we're all seeing. It's easy to get caught up in it, but every minute I'm getting something sensational. And by the way, the document case was tossed out. That would be enough for a week for me.
So back in Iowa and New Hampshire, February of this year, we sort of knew that this primary was always going to go to Trump, right? Like in your heart, you knew that this was more like a vice presidential tryout. And I have to be honest, to me, the election felt pretty sleepy until that debate. And then all of a sudden, this cascade of events has happened. Just like it's 3 weeks since that debate and all of these things have happened, including an assassination attempt on the former president, of which that story is growing by the minute. Yeah, so yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's fascinating to live through it. I'm not anxious to get to the end of the story yet. I don't want to flip ahead to see how it ends. It's really great. And it's great to also be here with a team at Fox News. I've never been happier. I love it here.
Ditto on that. I can't wait for tonight. We've been in that room every night for 5-6 hours at a time, and these delegates are jacked up. They're very positive. They're out. They're having a blast.
They're having so much fun.
The House band is undefeated. Really good. And I think around, 11:30 East Coast time, you're going to see red, white, blue, and a special color drop from that ceiling above.
And we saw Brian Kelly, American Spirit, one half of the Florida Georgia Line. I don't know if you heard.
We saw it.
Yeah. And when the Frat Boys came out. That's his song. He wrote that song. I love that song. I think it's a great patriotic song. It might replace our national anthem. That's controversial.
Listen, Dan and I think the House band is so good. They're that close to Spotify.
Really?
Yeah, that close? So I got a note yesterday from a songwriter from Nashville, and he says, hey, that's the band from Nashville. Will you guys shut up so that we can listen to them?
It is pretty amazing what they wire you guys up with, right? These two, I mean, you're totally deaf.
I would rather have these on my head than those things.
These are much more comfortable.
Can I just say, sexier, too? Also?
These?
Brian,
Dana
and me, you are always a man who's sexy.
Thank you very much. I wish Dana had said that, Phil, but that's okay. I'm going to watch you all day. Your coverage is fantastic. And we're going to watch you all night whether you want me to or not.
Thanks.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.